The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
I'm your host, Beverly Prentice, and you're listening to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, myth, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com. Thank you. Dog People by Esther Friesner. It was a lovely fall day in Manhattan, and the dead were living it up. They wandered along Fifth Avenue, sprawled in the sunshine, on the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral, pressed their noses against the show window of Saks, and caused more than a few minor accidents by their complete disregard for common sense safety rules and those city regulations that govern pedestrian traffic. When you're already dead, getting hit by a truck is the least of your problems and worries. New York's finest, a.k.a. the police, not the corned beef sandwiches from Cat's Deli, responded to a host of panic-stricken calls, only to find themselves just as boggled as the people who'd summoned them. They came in uniform and plain clothes, on foot, in patrol cars, by bicycles, and on horseback. They were prepared for the worst, having seen all the movies and television series presaging just such a cataclysm of animate cadavers. They were certain they'd be able to deal with the shambling, lurching, staggering hordes before the revenant's bites turned too many taxpayers and tourists into their brethren in decomposition. The trouble was, not one of the dearly reverted was shambling. What's more, none of the ambulant corpses was showing the least consideration for traditional zombie apocalypse values. They weren't dragging their feet. They weren't making repetitive, monosyllabic demands for directions to the nearest cerebellum buffet. They didn't even have the courtesy to rot. They smelled of twilight, mist, flowing water, and just a breath of small white flowers. How dare they be so poetic in their presentation? And their clothes, scandalous. Not a tear, not a tatter, not a streak of oil or soil or grave mold stained the austere yet elegant robes they wore. If not for the uncanny pallor, expressions of giddy joy, and complete lack of pointed ears, they might have passed en masse for an invasion of Tolkien fans cosplaying elves. Damn it, it wasn't just fair. You couldn't cut the collective disappointment of police and public once they understood they weren't about to be bitten with a knife. That was when the rioting began. The living swarmed the dead rather than vice versa. They confronted them, collared them, and shouted in their serenely smiling faces, demanding to be told what in hell or out of it was going on. Their targets remained, yes, I will say it, dead calm. The living who dared to grab their vestments found the cloth sifting gently and gradually out of their clenched fists, much like the grains of sand. The police suffered a similar lack of success when attempting to gather information. It wasn't that the dead were phantoms. They were far from disembodied, proving their physical presence every time they sought escape by shoving their way through a particularly inopportune group of air breathers. But it seemed that theirs was a situational solidity, something within their power to control, especially when they just could not be bothered to waste time on answering dozens of clamorous questions that all bothered and boiled down to, what the is going on here, Worm Chow? No one likes to be ignored, particularly New York tourists. Such visitors are usually paying top dollar for everything, and by the second but unwritten law of spending-based privilege, feel they are entitled to be heard and answered now. No exceptions, because do you know what I had to go through to get vacation time and coordinate it with these Hamilton tickets? If the police had paused to think about it, they should have rejoiced over the small mercy that at least this burgeoning mess was happening in September rather than during the Christmas season hot zone. Come December, out-of-towners possessed tickets to the Nutcracker and the Radio City Music Hall Christmas Spectacular were to mere Hamilton holders as Klingons were to kittens. Add suburbanites with small children in row, and the analogy went to DEFCON negative gazillion. Things got louder. The sounds of yelling blended nicely with a rising sonic tide of smartphones and even actual cameras snapping up the scene. Some of the more ambitious shutterbugs were trying to persuade the dead to trip the light fantastic for them. Talk about your TikTok challenges. To say nothing of the brouhaha being raised by the slowly choking traffic. Oh, the cacophony of honking. There is a little-known mechanico-messianic legend that says, for there shall come a day when gridlock will be upon the face of every damn street in Manhattan. None shall pass, not even those rental bikes hawked to the I-can't-get-killed-if-I'm-on-vacation crowd. And lo, in that moment shall the chosen one at last be manifest to our eyes, for they shall lean mightily upon their horn, and behold, the gridlock shall wither, fade, and perish merely at the sound. Yea, it should be undone forever. So keep on blaring your stupid car horns without pause or mercy, even when there is no way it's going to do a lick of good to clear the way. Maybe you'll turn out to be the chosen one. Maybe not. What do I know? Amen. And through it all, the dead drifted as peaceably as the living would permit. There were more of them now. They were multiplying like images in a row, facing funhouse mirrors, except without the various comical distortions. Some had made brief forays down side streets. Some found seats in pedicabs that had been stalled curbside by the mob scene. But the main body appeared to be drawn uptown, away from Saks and St. Pat's, north to the beckoning green of Central Park. A famed hotel stands at the eastern corner of Central Park South, where the festively bedizened heroes of the hansom cabs patiently await their next fares. While some luxe city lodgings are famous in song and story, the plaza's renown rests partly on the fictitious shoulders of an endearing imp named Eloise, and partly on the apocryphal tale of Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald, frockling in the Pulitzer fountain out front. They also do a lovely tea at the Palm Court. The four stately women who now emerged from the plaza's front door in the midst of the ongoing hoorah did not look at all disposed to recreate the Fitzgerald's impromptu paddle. They seemed even less likely to be the sort of persons who would tolerate Eloise's charming gift for juvenile nihilism. The elegance and style of their garb was reminiscent of Hollywood's high society heroines. Myrna Loy and Katharine Hepburn would have been pleased to join them. William Powell would have cocked an eyebrow in a raffish manner and offered to comfort them with martinis. For comfort they needed, if the appalled expressions on their lovely faces spoke truth. The tallest of the group was a mature, dark-haired beauty in green and gold. Her very presence was a cage match between earthly allure and motherhood so pristine and pure that it would drive a philosopher mad trying to coordinate his paid-by-the-aphorism thoughts. She was accompanied by a younger version of herself, doubtless her daughter, a slender young woman able to wear a dress of poppy red without letting the dramatic color wear her. Third came a lady who did not so much move as embody elegance, grace, and sensuality with every step. The ivory hue of her classic sheath dress was the perfect contrast to the rich and radiant brown of her skin and the midnight shadows of her hair. Who invited the blonde? Yet there she was, as starlight fair and azure-eyed as any 1950s casting director might desire for the part of that one and only true American beauty. Summer's warmth had lingered into this strange September day like a politically contentious uncle at a fraught Thanksgiving family dinner, and yet she wore an ice-blue dress, liberally trimmed with fur, snow-white, ermine, to be precise. She also wore an attitude daring any of the more paint-pitching anti-fur activists to try that with her ensemble. Just try it. Come on, it'll be fun for me. You weren't planning on living forever, were you, sweetie? It was a very articulate attitude. The lady herself was no less articulate. "By the All-Father," she declared, "behold the sundering of all sense. See how the souls do swarm unswerving. Their ghastly gate goes grimly on, unceasing and unstoppable. Damn it, now we'll never get a cab. Freya, be calm. We must evaluate the situation rationally." Her companion in the off-white dress spoke in a voice so low and soothing that some might even say she purred, and some might subsequently receive a short, sharp slap for saying that. If there was one thing Bast was fed up with, it was being likened to a cat. "Just because I sometimes wear the appearance of a cat? Pshaw. Why do they all forget that I am the goddess of protection, of pleasure, of safe childbirth, all right, with a teensy bit of being the lady of dread and slaughter? Pet my belly uninvited and I will end you. But just because I like cats doesn't make me one." Bast's plea for cool heads was ignored, loudly ignored. The young woman in red was having hysterics, yowling into her mother's bosom. "I knew it," she wailed. "I knew everything was going too well for me. This is all Hades' fault. I've had such a lovely spring and summer without him sending me even one of his passive-aggressive, self-pitying Mr. Martyr texts. I almost believed he'd become a full-fledged grown-up. Well, that was too much to ask. I should have known that he wouldn't allow me to enjoy even one season of me time without him pulling some kind of selfish, narcissistic stunt like this." A jagged sob tore its way from her perfect lips. "Why did I eat those stupid pomegranate seeds and screw up my immortal life? I'm a goddess. Do I even need antioxidants? Oh, Mama, why didn't I listen to you?" "There, there, Persephone." Demeter stroked her daughter's hair. "I'm not exactly your husband's biggest fan, but I don't think this is something we can blame on him." "Yes, we can." Persephone's tear-streaked face challenged her mother. "Just look at them." She made a sweeping gesture to indicate the ever-swelling parade of past tense people. "Look, all of you, you tell me, Bast. Are they your dead?" "I think not," said the goddess of cats. Pleasure and protection. "Mine do not waft quite so much. They are too busy overseeing the labor of other Chabelle servants in our afterlife's field of reeds. Nor were they such as known to me. Nay, never, nope. Freya shook her head emphatically. Well, should I know who share the sorting of the slain with Odin Allfather, sending my selected ones to Sesrimir, that far-famed hall found in Folkvanger, my field of the fighters? Persephone rolled her eyes. Honestly, Freya, it's been just super hanging out with you and Bess these past 2 weeks, but do you have to be so alliterative all the time? Freya snorted. If you must know, Demeter's darling daughter, I do it dedicated to those whose valiant verses vitalize mortal memories of me. Which means, the Norse goddess gritted her teeth, peevish when pressed to parley in prose, which means their sagas are why people will remember me, no matter how good our farewell tea was. She nodded in the direction of the plaza. Deities cannot live on scones alone. It's human memory that keeps us alive, and the bards who craft the great sagas feed that, as we, Asir and Vanir, say, better Edda than Dedda. Enough, Demeter glared at Freya, then turned a blazing look at her soggy daughter. Yes, Persephone, you're right. Those are the dead who are under your husband's supervision and management, but they are not here because he sent them. I would wager all of next year's cacao crop on it, and you know what a chocolate I am. The goddess of spring sniffed loudly. Why are you taking his side if you hate him so much? I don't hate him. I just think he's a twit, and I'm not taking his side. I'm taking the side of logic. She grasped her daughter by the shoulders and gave her a gentle shake. Sweetheart, if there's one thing we both know about Hades, is that he's a hard-nosed, tight control freak. He likes to hold on to what's his, whether it's the hidden riches of the earth, the hordes of the dead, or you. Now, what day is today? September the somethingth, Persephone said sulkily. Today, Demeter said, overlooking her daughter's snit. Today is the eve of your return to the underworld. It's the day before autumn arrives. Your husband will have you all to himself tomorrow, and for as long as it takes for spring to return to the world, why, so why, should he go to all the bother of letting the dead run wild up here today, just to annoy you? That's true, Persephone, Bast cut in. He'll have you soon enough. Why do all this when it's needless? And imagine what a chore it will be to herd these free-range phantoms back below again. It will be a, as you would call it, Herculean task. Shh, not the H-word, Demeter said. My son-in-law hates the slightest whisper of Hercules' name ever since the big oaf stole his dog and rescued Theseus from being stuck to the chair of immobility. Bast's eyebrows rose. Don't you mean the chair of forgetfulness? That was what I heard it called in the legends. Forgetfulness would be a mercy, and that is hardly Hades' strong point. Demeter pursed her lips. No, both Theseus and his sworn brother-in-arms, Peirithous, were not consigned to the chair of forgetfulness. My darling son-in-law wanted those two rapscallions to sit still and spend every moment remembering how utterly deep-dish stupid they've been. Stupid and conceited, just because they might have had a dribble of divine ichor in their veins and their arteries, too. They decided they could help themselves to any daughter of Zeus they fancied. The nerve! I'm not too crazy about Hercules either, Persephone said. Why did he have to take Theseus? It was nice having someone different to talk to around that dull old place, and he was much nicer than his friend, Bast spoke. From what I read, when Hercules pulled Theseus from the chair of whatever, Peirithous wasn't the one who ended up. Despite her constant disclaimers of felinity, the goddess had a very kittish giggle. Persephone was not amused. It only left his there exfoliated. Don't make fun of him. Theseus was nice to me," she sighed wistfully. "Besides, he was kind of a dreamboat." "My dear, you forget why that dreamboat sailed into your husband's realm," Demeter said primly. "He was trying to help Pritheus abduct you." "Oh, big deal. Hades abducted me into the underworld. Pritheus came to abduct me out of it. Whichever direction I was carted didn't matter. No one bothered asking what I wanted." "Well, if they had asked, it would have been elopement, not abduction," Bast pointed out. "Abduction, elopement, kidnapping, rideshare, but clever. Hades' queen never cared much for potatoes. "I honestly wish Hercules had freed both of them instead of snatching the cute one and leaving the whiner." "Persephone?" A quavering, querulous voice called out from the ranks of the uptown-bound dead. "Persephone, was that you calling me?" A man clad in a short, badly stained woolen tunic came stumbling toward the group by the Pulitzer fountain. He was grinning with just the right touch of madness to trigger any wise woman's fight-or-flee response. "You remembered me. You care. You love me, too. I knew it. I knew we were meant to." Freya stowed forward, grabbed him by the throat, and pitched him away so hard and with such divine precision that he ended up dangling from the allegorical equestrian statue across the way. The upraised hand of victory, leading General William Tecumseh Sherman, had shot right up the back of his tunic, turning him into the world's most hapless hand puppet. The Norse goddess then turned to Persephone. "Pirithous? Pirithous." By now, the stream of spirits progressing up Fifth Avenue had become a flood, the flow augmented by mortals who still claimed breathing rights on this side of the dirt. Bast narrowed her golden gaze and looked grim. "Demeter, if it's as you say, and Hades never lets anything out of his grasp..." "Well, there was that little business with Orpheus getting his bride back, but then the silly goose mucked up everything and lost her again. Musicians." "Yes, but what I'm saying, and I did mention Theseus already, my son-in-law was livid about having to let him go, but in work out in the long run, mortals being, well, mortal. Hades got him back in the end." In the best bit her lip to keep from proving that even a millennia-old divinity can have a six-year-old's sense of humor. Even so. The goddess took a centering breath and regained her dignity. "Demeter, in this situation, we must accept the evidence of our eyes. If Hades would not willingly release his dead, then something awful has happened to Hades," Persephone cried. "By the duat, whose guts do I have to stuff into a canopic jar before I get to finish a sentence around you too?" Bast spat. Persephone was too distraught to give her a glance, let alone an apology. "Mama, he's in trouble. I know it." She wrung her hands. Bast sidled up to Demeter and whispered, "Why should she care? I thought she resented Hades for abducting her." The Lady of Bountiful Harvest sighed. "I give up trying to figure out the relationship between those two back when Helen of Troy was still beautifying her diapers." "Mama, please." Persephone seized Demeter's upper arm. "What are we going to do?" She dug her fingers into her mother's flesh to the point where the great goddess yelped. An answering chorus of yelps, whines, and whimpers replied. From out of the east, East 59th Street to be exact, came a terrifying sight. Mottled blue-black fur covered a long-legged, lumbering canine body a good three stories high. Huge paws plowed through the surging hordes on Fifth Avenue, tossing mortals and the fugitive dead aside with each step, like a child kicking its way through piles of autumn leaves. The dead regained their feet calmly, but the living reached a unanimous decision to be elsewhere stat. Tick-tock, triller, ex et al be damned. three monstrous heads dipped streams of bubbling drool and showed flashes of ghastly yellow fangs. Cerberus! Persephone's eyes were wide in disbelief. Sweetie! Six-pointed ears flicked up at the sound of her voice. The beast uttered a happy bark and leaped from one side of Fifth Avenue to the other, dwindling in size in midair until by the time he landed, he was in just the right proportion to his mistress to roll at her feet, begging for belly rubs. Bast jumped away, a sharp hiss escaping her lips before she realized what she was doing and tried to turn it into a whistle. While her daughter crouched to cross-examine the three-headed dog as to whether he knew who was a good boy, Demeter struggled to remain calm. Oh, this is bad. This is beyond bad. What world-shattering force could be great enough to make the underworld's most feared and loyal guardian abandon his duty and his master? By Loki's whoopee cushion, I say nay. Freya stood tall, fists clenched, her lovely face transformed by battle hunger. Are we goddesses, or are we ground squirrels? We must act. It will help us work off all those finger sandwiches and scones from tea time. Clearly the crisis had put an end to the Norse deity's penchant for alliteration, and about time, too. Her first act was to accost one of the drifting dead, demanding answers. All she got for her trouble was a benign smile and renewed drifting. She tried this tack on several others with the same lack of success. That won't work, you know, Persephone piped up from where she was still engaged in giving Cerberus a vigorous belly rub. Our dead can't talk unless you pour milk, honey, and wine into a trench, then sprinkle some barley on it. Oh, and cut the throats of a ram and a ewe so the dead can drink their blood. I think that's it. Easy peasy. Peasy me no easies. Where am I to get all that in this neighborhood? There isn't a Trader Joe's for blocks, Freya declared angrily. Well, the Central Park Zoo might let you have. No. Impossible. Bass spoke loudly in order to be heard from her newly secured position on the far side of the Pulitzer Fountain. This part of Manhattan hasn't been zoned for blood sacrifice since the 60s. At least our dead are not such fuss budgets. Freya curled her lip. Not talking without a drink of ram's blood? Just wet the lips of my eternal guests with a sip of mead, and there's no shutting them up. They'll start by bragging about their glorious final battle, and end by brawling until everyone in the hall is dead again. Now, that's what I call fighting spirit, Persephone made a scornful sound. We'll excuse our dead for ditching mayhem in favor of philosophy. Freya clapped her hands over her ears. Don't you dare say the F word in my presence. Girls, girls! Demeter tried to restore order with little success. Feelings were running too high and nerves stretched too thin. As always, crisis calls forth unsolicited input. Hey, can I help? Pertheus called out. Freya marched purposefully to where Persephone's would-be abductor swung slowly from Victory's arm. You dangly one, she shouted. You are not dressed as your fellow escapees from the underworld. You speak where they are silent. Explain. Well, I'm not dead yet, Pertheus replied. I was alive when I sat down, so I guess I've only got underworld tourist status and not, you know, resident. But I think I'll be heading there eventually, now that I'm back in the waking world. Although, he assumed a thoughtful expression that looked somewhat out of place on his otherwise vapidly handsome face. Although, since they made Hades their slave, could be all bets are off about me dying, or those guys going back over the Styx. He jerked his thumb toward the ongoing parade of the departed, but back again. The gesture sent him swaying gently. At Pertheus's words, Demeter hurried to Freya's side. They? She echoed. What they? Who on above or under earth would have the power to enslave the dreadful daughter-snatching lord of the underworld? Get me down and I'll tell you. Pertheus tried to look canny. He succeeded in looking even goofier than usual, which was saying something. A nimble sort, Freya casually, easily mounted the statue, unhooked the hero, and let him drop. She was down from the plinth to yank him on his feet between herself and Demeter before he could say, "Ouch! Talk!" "It was the animals," Pertheus said. "One moment everything's calm and boring, you know, the usual underworld vibe. And the next, all you can hear is bark, 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 growl, howl, screech. Kee-yee-yee! Gods, what a racket! So Hades had to intervene, right? First he separated them, then he took care of the damage, and then..." "Damage?" There was a dangerous note in Freya's voice. A gasp came from Persephone, who had finished cosseting Cerberus's belly and moved on to stroking one of his heads. "Oh, no, you poor puppy," she cried. "Look at your muscle. Where did you get such an awful slash? Who hurt my little lovey doggums, hmm?" She overwhelmed the guardian of the dead with coos and kisses. "Please don't tell me that Hecate's dogs got into a fight with Cerberus," Demeter groaned. "You would think that a goddess with three faces could keep at least one pair of eyes on her stupid sacred mutts. She'll probably blame my daughter for it, too." "Who slanders my dark name?" The voice was everywhere, underscored by the rumble of a volcano stirring from sleep. "Now, when I must toil to return to the underworld to its proper state and populace, who would distract me from my hallowed labor?" A sulphurous miasma seeped over the lip of the Pulitzer fountain. Trails of golden vapor flowed together and rose gracefully like the crest of a wave. A stately female figure, seen first as but a shadow, emerged from the cloud. Both hands carried blazing torches, and she came attended by lean-bodied, sharp-faced dogs. "Behold, I am here, drama queen," Demeter muttered. Then more audibly, "Hail, Hecate, would you be a dear and put your darling pets on a leash? One friend Bast isn't much of a dog person." "Big surprise." Bast peered at the newcomer. "Aren't you supposed to have three faces?" Hecate's nobly singular face favored the Egyptian goddess with a condescending smile. "It's a metaphor." An angry Persephone got to her feet and gave Hecate some serious stink eye. "You ought to be ashamed of yourself," she cried. "Look what your hounds did to poor little Cerberus." Hecate waved one of her torches in a dismissive manner. "Look what happened to my beloved dogs before you go dropping blame bombs." She brought the torch around so that illuminated streak after streak of crimson scratches running the length of each dog's sides. "Are you accusing Cerberus of doing that?" Now the goddess of springtime was bristling like a porcupine. "If he had bitten your little flea bags, he would have left much wider, deeper marks. And you are actually bragging about how much worse harm your dog could have done to mine?" Hecate smirked. "I did not come here to sign up for a game of competitive stupid. I have work to do, work that your husband, great Hades, begged me to take on, might I add. He may be held immobile in the world below, unable to escape his fate, but he is aware that his importance, he is not his by a dang thesaurus, Persephone. Impotence has permitted the denizens of this kingdom to depart unhindered. It is my care to herd them back. See there how my dire authority already compels them toward the place which harem awaits them." This time she used both of her emblematic torches to gesture from the ever greater mass of escaped souls to the waiting expanse of Central Park. She looked like a ground crew member trying to berth the plane. "Well, that's good, isn't it?" said Demeter, with polite, if ersatz, optimism. It's progress, is it, Demeter? Hecate was not famed for looking on the sunny side of things. Is it really? Even if I account for every deserter, I have no notion of how we shall keep them there below once returned. Since Cerberus fled in terror, we might as well have installed revolving doors. Hades' realm wants a master, and in Tartarus, the land that lies even deeper in the underworld, worse is stirring. Those grim gates have held so far, yet they are already straining against the chains that bind them. It is only a matter of time before they are sundered, and the monsters within are free to destroy everything within their reach. Freya's complexion went white enough to cause snow blindness in the unwary. No, she shook her head. No, Demeter, this is an emergency. I have to go to your underworld before the gates of Tartarus give way and something happens to my... Tears spilled down her cheeks. I'm so sorry, Freya. Persephone put one arm around the Norse goddess's shuddering shoulders. This is my fault. When I invited you to join my farewell tonight, and you said you couldn't leave them alone for so long, I said they'd be just fine staying in my home until we were done partying. So I had Hermes take them there. When he reported back, he told me Hades didn't want the responsibility, but swore by the Styx that he'd take care of them as a favor to me. Now it looks like he can't even take care of his own, but we will all go and set this right. Bast said staunchly. No question, said Demeter. Cross-pantheon journeys aren't the done thing, but we'd best make an exception. Hecate, can you help us? Anything to restore order. Perhaps you can get the Herlord of Gloom and Doom and more gloom to tear himself out of that chair and tidy up his own cursed mess. Come. Hecate's power swept them up with such force that Pirithous was caught in the supernatural jet stream and carried along for the ride. She brought them to the shores of Central Park Lake, where Charon was doing a brisk trade in ferrying the AWOL dead back to the underworld. He gave the goddesses free passage as a professional courtesy, but balked at taking Pirithous. I charge 2 obols a trip, firm. I know this lunk. He once crossed into the underworld without paying, him and that buddy of his, but not again. No, sir. No fare, no fairy, he grumped. Demeter sighed. Do you take crypto? It was only when the group passed under the bow bridge that Persephone finally became fully aware of something Hecate had said. Chair? Tear himself out of it? Mama, do you think Hades could have been dumb enough to sit in the chair of immobility himself? Pirithous honed in with yet another unasked opinion. Well, it does look kind of comfortable for a rock, and Theseus and me did warm it up for him. He punctuated his sally with an aggravating nyuk-nyuk-nyuk, worthy of Curly from the Three Stooges. Persephone encountered with a smack worthy of Moe. The darkness beneath the bridge gave way to deeper darkness. Persephone once more breathed the familiar atmosphere of her husband's domain. When Charon's boat touched the shore, she leaped out and began running, with Freya close behind. Hades' conscripted queen didn't stop until she reached a monumental chunk of basalt whose contours were reminiscent of a low-backed chair, apart from a few scraps of cloth and, well, let's just say, remnants of a very thorough exfoliation treatment. It was empty. I don't understand it, Persephone said. This is the chair of immobility, but he's not here. What happened? Never mind him. Freya clenched her fists and teeth simultaneously, everything about her on the brink of snapping like an over-tightened harp string. Where are they? Is this where you brought my babies to be tended in my absence? Persephone's angry tension more than equaled Freya's. Of course not, you dolt. Does this look like a fit place to keep your precious, unbelievably spoiled babies? She hit the last word with enough sarcasm for a whole posse of mean girls scenting a fashion-challenged math nerd. I told Hemrys to bring them to the palace. Then why are we wasting our time here? Lead on. Persephone bit back a sharp reply. Freya had a valid point. She took off again, racing through the shadows, until the palace of Hades appeared before her. She burst through the doorway, calling her husband's name. Frantic, she darted from room to room, leaving Freya behind. All the chambers were deserted. She returned to the entry hall where Freya waited, seething. By this point, Demeter and Bast had arrived, the latter dragging Pirithous by the back of his tunic. The sight reminded Persephone of a mother cat hauling along a fractious kitten. The given Bast's "for the last time, I am not a cat goddess" stance. She thought better of it. Persephone's mother leaned against one of the chalky pillars, catching her breath. "Any luck?" Bast asked. Persephone shook her head. "I've looked for Hades everywhere." "That does it," Freya said. "I couldn't care less if you ever find your husband, but I will find my dear ones." She threw back her head and shouted, "Smar, Mindri, hear me. Come to Mama." For a relatively small goddess, she had a remarkable lung power. The entry hall pillars shook and a rain of dust pattered down from the ceiling. But that was all. Then, just as Freya was drawing breath for a fresh bellow, a deep voice rolled up from beneath the marble slabs under the goddess's feet. "Shh! Hush! Or did he?" Persephone slapped her forehead. "Oh, there he is! The first place I should have looked. Come on, ladies." The goddesses and Pirithous flitted through endless halls that nonetheless ended in down flights of eternally descending steps that still managed to stop at some point. At last, Persephone halted before an iron-hinged oak door that was surprisingly modest in size compared to the titanic architectural scale of the rest of Hades' palace. "It's his god cave," she explained, as she gently pushed it open. "Hey, out there, I said, shh, be quiet or die." "Shush yourself, honey," Persephone replied cheerfully, "and stop with that silly old or die thing you always tack on when you're trying to impress mortals. It didn't work with Orpheus or Hercules, and it's simply ridiculous now when we've got divine company." She gave Pirithous a short, scornful glance. "Plus one." "Oh, sorry, love." Hades' accent switched from chthonic to superficial. "You're home early. Welcome back. Come in. But quietly, okay?" They entered Hades' private retreat soft-footed. The room was even darker than the rest of his empire. All they could see before them was the seated figure of the fearsome god, faintly outlined by a scant glow of dying firelight. He made no move to turn as they approached. "Baby?" Persephone ventured quietly. "Shh! Please keep it down. Purr, 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 purr." "My babies!" Freya darted forward, shoving Persephone to one side. The pair of massive cats sprawled comfortably across Hades' lap, raised their heads, and gave the goddess a slow, sleepy blink. She promptly fell to her knees and buried her face in their thick blue-gray fur. When viewed by those still standing behind Hades, her spontaneous demonstration of joy presented a somewhat awkward picture. Fortunately, all present were much too polite to make any risque marks. Well, except for Pirithous. Later, having transferred Theseus, old drinking buddy, to the chair of sit down, shut up, and think about what you just said, a deeply embarrassed Hades tried to justify what had happened. The group had moved to a dining table upstairs, dominated by a cornucopia centerpiece. Here sat three of the ladies, picking at servings of nectar and ambrosia, all the while taking guilty pleasure in watching Hades squirm. "Well, how could I have moved? They were sleeping. I couldn't very well get up and disturb them." Of course not, said Freya from under the table, where she was still cuddling her darlings. Since when do you care about cats? Persephone challenged. You own a dog. Your cousin Hecate owns a bunch of dogs. Those cats attacked and chased off your dog. And when the dead found out Cerberus wasn't there to keep them down here anymore and started leaking into the upper world, you couldn't be bothered to stop them because it would disturb those cats? What can I say? At first I wasn't crazy about having them here, but after a while, Hades shrugged. They grew on me, he chuckled. I mean, who wouldn't be impressed by how they stood up to Cerberus and Hecate's pack? He stretched out a hand to tickle the nearest cat under the chin. Who's a badass kitty? You are. Yes, you are. Well, you cost me my last day in the sun this year, Persephone folded her arms. I've been shortchanged because of your shenanigans. She's right, Hades, Demeter chimed in on her daughter's side. You know our bargain. My child made the mistake of eating 6 seeds from one of your pomegranates, so she stays 6 months down here. 6 months in the upper world. 6 months. Not 6 months minus 1 day, not even minus 1 minute. Truly, you have most grievously cheated your bride. Bass steepled her fingers. If you were one of my followers, you would carry the sin beyond the grave and the demon Amor would devour your heart. But I'm not. Hades took one look at the hard stairs drilling into him and surrendered. Fine. You know what, Persephone? Take the day you lost. Take more. Take all you want. What do I care if it's always spring and summer and the whole surface world goes up in flames like a plate of Saganaki? You do you. Persephone threw her arms around Hades' neck and kissed him. Thank you, honey. I knew you'd understand. She turned to the other goddesses. I have to grab a few more outfits as long as I'm going back uptown for an extended stay. Come help me choose. The goddesses began filing from the room, laughing and trading fashion tips. As Freya rose to join them, Hades seized her sleeve. If you want to hang out with the wife some more, seeing as she's extending her surface stay, I wouldn't say no to keeping on minding the furballs for you. You know, as long as they're already here. No, thank you. Freya flicked her sleeve out of his grasp. Her whole demeanor was colder than the thimble winter. As soon as I come back from helping Persephone pack, I am taking Smar and Mindery away from me, with me. I cannot trust you. You endangered them. You let them get into fights with common curs. Well, more like uncommon curs, but wrap up your goodbyes with them by the time I return. I have spoken. Hades watched Freya go, then looked down sadly at the cats he had come to love. As a savvy deity, he recognized the value of being cross-culturally informed. His major in comparative mythology would never be the target of that cruel punchline. Do you want fries with that? I know she's your person, he said. I know she loves you. But she also uses you to pull her chariot. A big chariot. Heavy. You two are hitched, bridled, giddy-upped, forced to take orders. That's no life for a cat, not even big galoots like you two. I wish you were my galoots. I wouldn't force you to do anything. Smar stopped licking his nethers. Mindery tilted her head in a fetching fashion. Both cats padded over to Hades and rested their heads on his knees. Their stares seemed to tell him that they understood. They understood a lot. Hey, wait, what are you doing on? I don't think cats are supposed to get up on the table. And Hades smiled. Freya's cats had their muzzles buried in the overflowing fruits and vegetables of the cornucopia.